We're going to take up a study of the story concerning the birth of Moshe. This is something that makes an impression on you as a kid, but you know, it's okay. I mean, on the surface level, it seems to be all right. It makes sense, whatever. But I think if you analyze it, you'll notice that there are problems. So take a look. The story begins actually in Perek Beis. It's preceded by the story of the Mialdos. There's a connection between the two, obviously. The connection between the two is that it takes place at the time when the Gzera of Paro was in effect to kill out all the male children of the Jews. Pasuk Chaf Beis is sort of the transition, because the Mialdos refused. The first part of the plan was for the Mialdos to kill them in the moment of childbirth without the mother even discovering it. And that's a separate story. They resisted, so whatever. Then Vayitzav Paro L'chol Amo Lemor. Paro commanded his entire people, saying, Kol HaBein HaYilod HaYorot HaShlichuhu. Every male that is born should be cast into the river. L'chol HaBast Chayim. Okay. You can make an issue. I mean, Chazal talked about it seems Kol HaBein, it didn't say the Jewish Bein, you know. And there's a Chazal that says that there was on a given day that their astrologers had predicted that the Moshiach of Israel was going to be born. But they didn't know if it was from the Jews or from the Egyptians. Could be from the Egyptians. So therefore they decreed on that given day that all the males should be born. And I think you're familiar with that Chazal. Okay. That's a Chazal. My opinion, Pshuto Shel Mikra, is obviously it's a reference. You see from the subsequent story. It's difficult also to maintain that there was a general decree, that Pharaoh would make a general decree that all the Egyptian males should be killed, and that the people would just passively accept it. It's very, very hard. I mean, it has to be very difficult. Very difficult. Even, it's hard to imagine him getting the entire people to agree to kill their, that that would be in the best interest of the people. It's odd. So it's a medrash. You know, whatever the significance of the medrash is, clearly this is not the policy. Now the reason why, in my opinion, there's no need for it to say Bain or Ivri, because we know the context makes it very clear what we're talking about. Okay. Now,
besides, it doesn't say they shall be here.
There's only a pasuk in Chumash that doesn't lend itself to question. First of all, I'm going to ask a general question. What do we have to be told about the birth of Moshe? I think that itself is unusual. The Torah normally does not describe the birth of the great people. In fact, it seems to be contrary. Usually we encounter the people, David HaMelech, it doesn't talk about his birth. And he is the first Mashiach, actually. He's the first Mashiach. It doesn't tell us anything about the circumstances of his birth. You may say that there's nothing unusual about the circumstances, but the birth of Avraham Avinu, we encounter Avraham Avinu, usually we always encounter the person when he's already involved in his activities. Now, here, we're being introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu. At what point should we be introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu, would you say?
When he went out.
When he goes out. All right, so therefore we'd have to know that he was raised in the house of Paro. But the Torah is pretty skimpy. The Torah doesn't tell us anything more than we need to know. Because that's the first, that is essential. That he saw his brothers, the Shlosim. You see, the Pasuk makes a point of that he still did not break his identification with his brothers, even though he was raised in the house of Paro. That's a very important thing. So, I think it's a question. Alright? I'm not saying it's. What?
But Yaakov, the attempt.
The birth over there, because it's making a specific point. You see, the two.
It doesn't tell him about him. It tells more about
the twins.
Right.
The twins. Yeah,
right.
There was a reason for it. What I mean to say is, other than that, I think that in other systems, where there's a desire to glorify someone, so then they always go back to the circumstances of the birth. You know, what kind of the situation was like. You know, and usually it's always a situation where, for some reason or other, it was, he really wasn't supposed to even make it somehow. Right? To bring in this aura, which you have over here. I mean, there is that. But I'm saying this is not the Torah way. It's interesting, you find it in these types of biographies. Whenever it's not a realistic presentation, they're trying to sort of mystical, glorified. They always have some little things about when he was born, you know. This thing happened, whatever. It's always
virgin birth.
I mean, there's got to be a reason. Anyways, I think it's something to point out. We what's the point? Now, if you go to the psukim, virtually every pasuk presents a problem. Okay, so I'll go through that quickly. And I don't know that I'll have the opportunity to answer every particular question. But that's, you guys have a, Pesach coming up. That's the point. I'll give you what to work on. Pasuk Aleph. What's the problem with Pasuk Aleph?
Very general. What do you call their names?
Well, first of all, two things. The fact that the parents of Moshe got married is not really, again, doesn't seem to be extremely important. Right? Obviously. I mean, why do we have to know that? But even so, it's strange because it doesn't even mention who they are. And we know that they're important, but it's Amram and Yocheved. So the omission of the name, it seems to me, is significant. You know, the Chazal interpret this, that it was a remarriage, that they had separated, which makes more sense. In other words, it fits into the flow, because then it says in the next pasuk, Vatar Isha Vatelet Bain, which would indicate that this marriage was purely for the sake of the having of a child. According to Chazal, Amram had separated from Yocheved because of the Gzer of Paro. He didn't want to have any children, because the males would be killed. You know, so Miriam argued with him and said that your decree is harsher than Pharaoh's, because he only decreed on the sons, and you decreed on the daughters as well. So he listened to her argument. So that's why, Vayikach means it was the second. He took her back. And then Vatar, that was the whole point. The whole point. Okay, that's the Chazal. But still, it doesn't mention the names, which I think is significant.
And the way it does identify them is.
The thing is like this. The next, in Pasuk Beis, is one of the main questions which Moshe mentioned. It's very, very difficult. Because what's very difficult is Vatera Oso Kitovu Vatitzbenei Shloshi Yerachim. That is very, in other words, first of all, what does it mean they saw that he was good? Like every parent thinks that their child is, was unusual. What parent doesn't think their child is good? And what's the implication? Whatever you're going to say. Now, the point is that there is a problem, because the implication is cause and effect. The Torah, again, the Torah does not just record of it, if they like the child. It's absurd. It seems to be because they saw that he was good, so therefore, v'tispinei shlosh yerachem. V'lo yachlo hatspino v'tikichlo tevas gomer. It seems to be that that's a crucial factor over here. As if that wouldn't have taken place, if they hadn't seen that he was good, then they wouldn't have done any of these things. I mean, it's very difficult. As I said, most parents think that, very highly of their own children. There's a natural connection. And secondly, even if they didn't, so what do you mean, they wouldn't have tried to save him? What would they have done?
Yeah, also.
Chazal come into the picture. This is a big problem. Obviously, you can have a big problem with the word tov. What do you see about what could be good or not good about a kid? I mean, unless the kid is like diseased or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then, any normal baby is tov. What are you going to say?
That's why.
That's why Rashi says, "Kishenolad nismalei abayis kulo ora." That when he was born, the house is filled up completely with light. Of course, what is that? What are they getting at? I mean, because it's very hard. You just can take that literally. I was talking to people in my shul. I have no problem taking that. If the Torah tells me that's the fact, I believe in miracles. If that's the fact. Of course, they have to be verifiable and according to the Torah. Then I know that if that's what the Torah is saying, so that's fine. But once you make that into the pshat, then the whole story, there's no point in telling me the story, because...
Pointless.
Yeah, because then everything, they knew, basically what you're getting down to is that God gave them signs and so on and so forth, so therefore everything they did was done because of those signs, so then there's nothing to study anymore, we're going to study. I don't think that's not the plain pshat. I mean, all the mafarshim have difficulty with this. It's a very, very strong question. It's a very, very difficult thing. Though. This whole pasuk, which on surface reading, reads very smoothly and nicely, when you analyze it, is very difficult. What's the Torah telling us? Okay. Then it says like this. They couldn't hide him any longer.
There.
the Sforno says Kitovu Yofe. Yofe means beautiful. Kamo Kitovos Heino. Rasa Yofe Yoser Mimasha Hayamurgo. He had a certain beauty to him, certain uniqueness. Of course, you could ask, well, my question still remains. So what? I mean, if he wasn't beautiful, he wouldn't be worth saving. But all right, I'm not going to read the rest of the Sforno. He gives an explanation. Now that's part of the answer here. But I don't know that anyone is explaining it that way. It seems to go against the flow of the pasuk that they saw that he was good for hiding, that he wouldn't make noise. I mean, that's a hard one. In fact, that goes contrary. The Rashi that says that he was born prematurely explains that that's why they were able to hide him for 3 months, because nobody was looking for him for 3 months. In other words, the Egyptians took note of who was pregnant.
Right.
And they set off the date for 9 months. That's the Rashi. So then, it's irrelevant whether he cried or didn't cry. There, nobody was looking for him at that point. So that contradicts that shot. Okay. Now, then it says they took a little ark, I guess it's translated, from the skoma wood, and they covered it with chema and zephes. And Rashi makes a point of saying that the zephes was on the outside and the tit was on the inside. It had more, it had a pleasant smell. That tzaddik shouldn't have to smell the unpleasant aroma, etc. Batosem ba es hayelad, and they placed the child there. Batosem ba suf al sfas hayor, and they placed him in the river, basically, right? Or the reeds. They placed him in the reeds, but in the water. Okay. I don't know why. Well, first of all, what's the main question is, what was the plan? What kind of plan is it? What was the point? It doesn't seem. You see, again, something. The problem is with a lot of these stories. I'll tell you what the problem is. It ends. You get the ending. It all ends beautifully. It works out beautifully. So when it works out so beautifully, you assume that it was a perfect plan. So a person doesn't stop and analyze and break it down. A lot of these stories that flow nicely with the. Then, if the story would have ended differently, you know, like a boat comes along and runs it over or something. You know. The point is like this: what puts you to sleep is that you're reading the Torah, it's like, and everything, you know, works out happily ever after kind of thing. So of course that way it sounds, you know, nice, it's a nice story. But when you think about it, that's something to think about. There must have been some calculation. They had 3 months' time to plan. And this is what they came up with. Is this the only way? I mean, it's very nice because it worked out well. But that seems to me to be the only reason. Other than that, what's the justification for the plan? Now, when you study it, you have to assume that they did not know how the story was going to end. Of course, if they did know how the story was going to end, then there's nothing to talk about. But they did not know. And if they did not know, so whatever were they thinking? Is my question. I also think Joe's question is valid. Why do we have to be told such as the description over here? They covered it, what they covered it with, and all that. I mean, all right, that's not a problem, though. It's not such a problem. Because given that this is the plan, so it's telling you that they designed it with care or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying it's such a big problem that you can't live with, but it is a little bit unusual. I mean, you say otherwise, because why does Rashi make a point? Rashi sees a point in it. You follow? Rashi does see a point in it. Otherwise, why tell us what they put on the outside and what they put on the inside? Essential question is going to go through everything. Like, why? I mean, what would they have done differently for any baby? Okay. Anyway, yeah, Rashi's referring to him as a tzaddik. That's very difficult. See, Rashi referring to him as a tzaddik is very difficult, but what kind of a tzaddik is he already? It's one thing that he's tov. The kid was tov. Okay. We'll accept that he was so beautiful. Nah, not only that, it's a tzaddik. That goes completely against our concept of a tzaddik. I mean, again, it's not a Jewish idea. Gentiles have this idea that infancy is sort of a pure state, right? We know,
yep.
It's not relevant. He doesn't have the use of his bechira at that point. A tzaddik is only someone who uses his bechira properly. So it's very difficult. It's kind of funny. I mean, Ben is sitting up. It is kind of funny because Maman of Shach. Are they operating with the assumption that all will work out well? And so then you're right. So why put it in the water where he can drown? Mm-hmm. Right. On the other hand, If they're not, so then what's all these statements about the star? You know, and the plan itself has to be scrutinized. I mean, if they knew what the outcome would be, then why do you have to go ahead with the plan? If they didn't know what the outcome would be, then what's the point? What were they hoping for? All the questions come back. Now, then what happens next? The daughter of Paro, you know, as luck would have it, the daughter of Paro comes out to bathe. Okay, and I'm sorry that you're right. But they start to lachaz me'rachu, and that's all. Yeah, the sister watched from the distance, Ladea, to know what would be done with him. All right. The question I have with this is a different question, and that is that you know the Chazal that when Miriam was smitten with Tzaras, so it says that she was in Chuslamacha. You know, she was outside the camp for 7 days. So it said that the people didn't travel. They waited for her. The entire people waited for Miriam. And the Chazal said that was a reward because she waited to see what happened to Moshe. That was a reward. You heard that, Chazal? Yeah, again, that sounds like it seems like that's a tremendous thing that she waited to see. Why? What's such a tremendous thing? Any sister, right? It seems like any sibling, any sister would... Especially someone like again, Chazal say that the Shifra and Pua was you know, that Miriam was Pua. Mm-hmm. Someone that had such a concern for the babies and all.
You don't know how long that.
Moshe, it's hard to say that. Then you'd have to, but she actually didn't wait that long. It seems that it happened rather quickly. Yeah. Because, as Joe points out, how long can a baby go, you know, without nourishment, whatever. But a baby would have to have some nourishment. So even if you say that she was prepared to wait, how long could she be prepared to wait? It seems that she's being rewarded just for the fact that she waited, and how much of a wait could it have been? It's just, I think it's a question.
And the plan itself?
I think it's a question in the sense that I don't think the average person would view that as being such a great deed. That's all. Let's think about it. Ledea, the term Ledea. So it indicates that she knew. She knew that she'd be saved. She just, Ledea was to find out exactly how she'd be saved. The thing is that the Bas Paro goes to wash by the Nile, and her maidens were walking by the bank of the river, and she saw the ark in the middle of the bush of the reeds, and she sent out her maiden. Or Rashi says her hand, whatever, and she took it. Okay, now take a look at Vav. Vav is the construction of Vav is very, very interesting. Because it says that she opened it and she saw the child, the lad, and behold, it was a young Anar, a young child, crying. And she took pity on him. And she said, this one is from the Jewish children. It is a little bit unusual because the wording. It should have said that Vatifta Fatriyasa Yeled. Right? You know, then it could say, it's interesting that the way it works out is that she saw that he was crying, and then she said, which is nothing, you know, Nar Boche has nothing to do with Yalde Ivrim. Of course, the question is, how did she know? Let's get that. How did she know that it was a Jewish child? I believe Rashi learns that way, that because he was. Rashi is learning the Chazal that he was born Mahol, so therefore he was circumcised. Rashi has a different interpretation. I'm sorry. Chazal do say that, some say like that, because of the Mahol. The Ramban analyzed that, and I think he raises a good point. He said the Pasuk should have indicated and that she saw that he was circumcised. It doesn't indicate that. Just the indication, she looked at the child and she said, Mi'aldei Ibram. This is what I thought, and then you can check the Ramban, I think he's saying the same thing. Confirming, in other words, what I thought is that she deduced it from the circumstances, because she knew about the Gzera, about the decree, and therefore it made no sense who would be doing this. I mean, an Egyptian, if it was an Egyptian, and the Egyptian wanted to kill their baby, so then this clearly was a case where they didn't want. I believe that might be why. There's a description about the construction. You see that this thing was constructed very carefully, the choice of wood and how it was designed and so forth. But clearly, it's someone that wanted to save the baby. Nobody would go to that trouble to design, you know, to today when you find, well, people don't want a baby and they just want to get rid of it, they throw it in the garbage. Either the baby will die or someone will pick it up and have mercy on it. Mm-hmm. Now, no Egyptian wouldn't have any reason to do that. Because if an Egyptian wanted to get rid of the baby, they would just kill the baby. Or if an Egyptian didn't want to keep it, but wanted to keep it alive, they'd give it up for adoption. There was no decree against Egyptian babies. So who could it be? It seems to me that it was Muchach, that she was smart, and she deduced it from the circumstances. That here are people who are desperate, and they have this baby, and it's like a plea for help. The baby's been put into a situation, and there's a plea for help. I mean, it evoked a certain... Well, he was Nar Bocha. That's another issue, though. Why does the Pasuk have to tell me that he was crying? What? All babies cry. Here's a Chazal, which I think... Rashi says that... I think Rashi, take a look, says that it was the Malach Gabriel. Right?
No, it says Kol HaKanah.
Specifically, his voice was like an owl. But I think the Chazal say that take a look at the Torah Tzmi over there. There is a Chazal that say that the Malach Gabriel came and like pushed him and got him to cry. Which is interesting. No? Anyways, The rest, I'm not going to go into it. I mean, the rest of the Navatom Rachos or Baspar. Apparently, I mean, the reaction of Miriam. Miriam goes right into the position. It's not clear. She must have inched closer. Because she says, Eilech v'karasi loch isha meinekes, mir ivrios. So she moves very quickly. That's a very important move, to get control over the situation. Obviously, it was extremely important that Moshe and Rabbeinu will be raised, at least in the early years, actually, by his mother. The same Kol HaChazayela. It would seem that she was watching, and she probably inched her way closer, and then she heard. When she heard the same Nialda Ivrimza, right? So she... That's very important, because timing counts. I'll explain it to you. I mean, she obviously saw the reaction. She was waiting to see what would happen, what would be done. And when she saw the reaction, you see she exploited the situation. Because that's another development. And that is to say, that, in other words, the key question is, what's going to be the reaction of the daughter of Pharaoh? She knows the decree. This is a very big thing, to violate the decree of the king. Even though she's the daughter, it doesn't matter. So, there are two things over here. First of all, it's important that the child not be nursed. You see Chazal say that, the Rashi mentions, that's how she knew that he was Jewish, that she tried to get Egyptian nurses, and Moshe wouldn't, feed by them, wouldn't nurse with them. And then, whatever that means, it was very important that it be the mother. That's extremely important. Of course, I mean, Yahadis clearly believes that the early years are extremely important, the influences. So, but also it's important in that, you see, given that she was now inclined to saving the child, every step counts. It's easier to go back before you've taken a concrete step. Once you're nursing it, that's a further connection, a further investment in the child. So she acted in the correct way. And she said to the daughter, said Lechi, and she went and she got the mother of the boy. That's extremely important development. Not only is the fact that Moshe is saved obviously of importance here, there's more to it than that. And then she said, Hey Lechi, the yelad veinikel livani atinischarech v'tikach isha yelad v'tnikel. All right, then vayit al yelad v'tviel v'asparo v'hil avay. The only question I have about that is, I don't know how strong a question is, I think it's a question, is that why is the name of Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, Rabban shall call on Aviyim, determined just by what this Egyptian woman, she pulled him out of the water, maybe that was the name or whatever, but shouldn't he have an appropriate name? I mean, what name did the mother give him over there? You know, just because they named him that doesn't have to be the name, but that's the name. The Torah sticks with that name. Okay? I think there's a significance to it.
Well,
those are the main questions. Those are the main questions. Okay. That thing, well, what does Bas Parah think? Who's right. Who are you? Right. How do you know who the mother is? You must be part of this whole plan. That we don't know. That we're not being told. She doesn't offer, right. She doesn't offer to get the mother. Right. She doesn't offer to get the mother. She just offers to get a Jewish woman. Means that she must have, in other words, that Miriam must have heard, you know, she didn't hide the fact. She must have heard, oh, me, all the Ivrim, oh, so if I'll get you a, she offered to get a nursing mother from the Ivrios. Oh, because she's Jewish, in other words. That she didn't have to hide the fact that she's Jewish, and she knows, and she'll get the right. So, yeah, which is perfect, because where is she, you know, she's out by the river. Where she needs to get a nursing mother. Mm-hmm. So who would know better? She offered, and she said, fine. So then, you're right, Miriam went and got the mother. Okay.
Also,
yeah, like Max says, that they were operating over here on a different kind of a plane, seems to me. In other words, they were not operating on a plane where they were given a specific nevuah, like when Moshe was told to do specific things by God, and, you know, like the Jews should jump into the Yam Suf and split, you know, that's different, that's so fine. Okay, they were not. On the other hand, the things they're doing do seem to indicate that they're not the kind of things you would do if you didn't have any right to assume some type of unusual situation. It's sort of an in-between kind of zone. Menorah Chazal, Chazal would say that Miriam said, my mother is destined to give birth to the Mashiach. Miriam seems to be, what? Miriam seems to be like the one of the real hero of the story over here, no? According to Chazal, she was responsible for the marriage. She urged her father to get the marriage. She was proclaiming that my mother was destined to give birth to the Mashiach. Yeah, but it doesn't say what? Ladas, right? It says Ladea. Yeah, Chazal say that Miriam was she had Nevuah, and she said her mother is destined to give birth to the Moshiach. And then when he was born, the house was filled up with light. I mean, all these different. So you're saying, Max, like there's a different plane over here, sort of like an in between kind of a plane.
I know what, but it gives that impression.
So Ladea.
Right,
so
it says,
Ladas Mayyeh B'Sof Nevuasa. Ladas Mayyeh B'Sof Nevuasa. In other words, she was watching to see
how it's going to work out.
How it's going
to
work out.
Yeah.
In other words, not that she was in doubt as to whether he'd be saved or not, but the particulars, how it was going to work out. Meaning to say that she was acting with knowledge of it. Okay.
Well, that's interesting.
It's the point that, let me just. If you go through the Rambam in the areas of Mashiach, right? I think it becomes very clear from here that there's no individual who's been predetermined to be the Mashiach. Not a predetermined kind of a thing, right? I mean, you see how he describes that a person, the Mashiach himself. There's no such thing as like this person knows that he's the Mashiach and he's going to reveal himself. It's a mission. Which, now I'm not saying everybody's qualified for, but different individuals could be qualified. I mean, if they come along at the right time, the right place, and they achieve, you know, there's a whole process. First you're Cheskas Mashiach, etc., right? But at any point along the way, a person could fail, and he won't be the Mashiach. He could have been the Mashiach, and he not failed. But then somebody else would be the Mashiach. You see what I'm saying? It's not like there's a predetermined individual. Now, Rachel one time mentioned, though, that it's clearly based upon the Rambam says it openly. But there was only one predetermined individual whose existence was predetermined by God in our history, and that is Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam in Hilchos Avos Kechav mentions it when he talks about the whole progression, how the Jews had fallen back in the triumph, right? What does it say? It says the. He says after the Jews had regressed back into idolatry and so forth, and this is in the end of Perek Aleph of Hilchos Avos Kechavim. U'me'avas Hashem osanu, u'mishamor sashvu li'avram avinu, asa Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabban shall call hanavim v'sholcha. Asa Moshe Rabbeinu. That's a very, I don't think that term is used anywhere else. I was just discussing this idea, because I already had discussed it. But, what forces us to this conclusion? Well, just to expand on it a little bit, is that, you see, Moshe Rabbeinu, every species has an outer limit. I don't mean who's the best in the species, but the ultimate which that species can provide. You see? Now, there's no guarantee that any individual will ever reach that. I mean, that depends upon certain circumstances. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu represents the ultimate in the perfection of the human species. The ultimate. In fact, there's only one. He's like in a class by himself. There's only one person that would ever reach that level. Now, the fact that a person would even reach that level, right, is not, that itself is an amazing thing, but that he would reach it at a time when it was absolutely essential for God's purpose. And God's purpose was to give the Jews the Torah, and the Torah can only be given via an individual who reached that level of Ruach. That all these circumstances, you see, would come together at that particular, it can't be a matter of chance. It's not a matter of chance. See, that whole story is telling you that was the, in other words, God's relationship to the Jewish people begins with what? With creating Moshe Rabbeinu. By the way, I just want to make it clear. It doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu did not have Bechira, because he did have Bechira. So it doesn't mean, I mean, there is the possibility that he would have sinned and that doesn't mean that he didn't have Bechira. But it meant that he had all the capacities. Everything was designed, provided he would use the Bechira properly, everything was designed for him to achieve that level. And I think that is a little speculation over here. I don't know if it's, I'm not saying it's, I'm just tossing out this possibility. It could be that that's why the name of the parents are omitted. In other words, because parents means the cause of the existence. So by omitting the parents, it's directing you towards another force. In other words, what seems to permeate the story is the force, everything here is the Ashkacha.
And we'll say something like
that. I mean, in any way, shape, or form, to indicate, well, the Chazal say that there are three shits in the person. Of course, we don't mean it like the Gaim Chas V'Shalom. I don't mean any shape or form of being a child of God. I don't mean anything like that at all. You know, I mean in terms of the cause of his existence. It's indicating, it's just a point to take away, in other words, to take away, that would be like a normal situation. You know. So it does mention that he had parents, clearly, you see. But by omitting the name, it's like they're just a means to an end. You see, a name means you're the essential person over here, the essential factor. I mean, it could be. I mean, I have to think about it some more, okay?
You see, that
now, one second. Let me just show you how to cover the basic thing. Don't mind. Now, the thing is like this. It seems to me that... See, the key phrase is they saw that he was good. Now the Ramban makes the point, the Sforno makes the point, that, see, part of the Ashkacha involves two things. It means, in order for the Ashkacha to implement itself, to manifest itself, it means that God brings about certain things, but also God gives certain people the capacity to read into the Ashkacha. Now that's part of the story as well. Essentially, you see it from Miriam. That Miriam, I don't know if it was really, clearly it was not a full-fledged nevuah, otherwise it would tell us that, but she was they were operating over here with a deeper understanding, like a Ruach HaKodesh, a deeper understanding of the Ashkacha. And therefore the plans that they made were made, the only reason they made that plans is because their knowledge of the Ashkacha dictated that this was the proper thing to do. They were operating on a different plane. That's what they saw. They had reason to believe that there was a very good chance that this child would be the Moshiach. And then when they saw, we don't know exactly what they saw. That's what, by the way, the Sforno makes this point. I didn't read the entire Sforno before. When he says that Kitovu, you know, Varasa Yafa Yosef Masha Hoyam will go. The Khoshfa Shezehoy will taklas Mukhuvan. Ne'ez Yotra. And they thought that this was for a specific purpose from his creator, from God. The Ramban also says that the Torah is not telling you what exactly they saw, but they were looking at it with Ruach HaKodesh, and they were able to see certain things that I'm not saying they knew for sure again, you see? Because if you know for sure that this kid's gonna be saved, so they don't have to do anything. Right? But the actions that they took were based upon the fact that there was a good chance. Now I would say that's why the point was not just, because it occurs to me, if they just wanted to save him, is this the best way to save him? For example, why, like in Nazi Germany sometimes, they found people that were willing to pay them money, willing to take in a kid. Very often they raised a child as a Christian or whatever, but clearly it wasn't, I don't know if this was the best occasion. You couldn't find some way of hiding him, pay off somebody to make believe he was an Egyptian kid or whatever. But I would say that the plan was, I don't think that they just put him in the Nile, but they knew that the daughter, the princess, would go down there. They had it, and the plan was to do it in such a way that it would appeal to her mercy. See, that's why the pasuk. See, the everything that happens is the ashkacha over there. She sees it, and she opens it up, and then Na'ar Bochen. Why did Tadri was crying? Because that was the ashkacha that she cried at that moment. Why? Because when he cried at that moment, it evoked the mercy. And because of that mercy, if it had not happened at that moment, then he wouldn't have been saved. Because the pasuk says that she said, Mi'alvei Rimzah, afterwards, Vatach Mu'alav, Vatomer. Which means to say that had she, apparently when she first, before that fact, before she processed that fact that he's a Jewish kid, she just saw. Had she come to the conclusion that it's a Jewish child without that emotion, then it would have been a different thing.
She would have prevented the martyr.
Yeah, exactly. And then she would have said, well, this is the decree and he has to be killed, whatever. She would have walked away. She wouldn't have said. But that was the Ashkacha. The Ashkacha was that he should be crying. It would evoke the emotion. And once the emotion was there, then Mialde, remember that was already, she was already predisposed to say by the Ashkacha. That's why the pasuk works out beautifully. So the name Moshe, of course, the name Moshe signifies this whole idea that his existence was predetermined by the Ashkacha. That Moshe Rabbeinu was the only individual whose existence was predetermined. Because that whole idea of putting him in a situation where really the only way he could be saved was through the Ashkacha. That's basically what they were doing. That's why I think, again, I'm just talking vaguely, that's what they said to Vachosu Merachov. You see, because that takes a tremendous amount of courage. To have that type of... That's why a person... Sometimes a person will do something, but they can't tolerate, they can't bear to stick around and see what might happen. I mean, it could be a terrible thing. Who wants to see? I mean, something terrible could happen. It's a baby. But she had the courage to stay there, which meant that she had confidence in what she was doing.
Contrary to Hagar.
Yeah, she had confidence. Exactly, she had confidence, a certain type of a confidence, not to despair, in what she was doing, and it was a legitimate one. And then, of course, you see her behavior. Once, you know, the plan succeeded, so she moves in and she offers to get her Isha. And that was very crucial to the plan. All right, whatever the reason is, whether... You see, also, by the way, that's the idea of Ora, Nismale, Ora. I would say the Ora means that they perceived it. It's a subjective thing. It's not that there's a physical light. But it meant that these people were on a higher plane. And they did partake of Ruach HaKodesh, which is not necessarily the Ruach per se. But they were able to read the situation sufficiently that there was enough grounds to assume that this child would be saved. Through the Ashkacha.
And how did you explain?
Calling him a tzaddik means he wasn't a tzaddik, but they had sufficient reason to believe that he was the one who was predetermined. In other words, they knew that there would be an individual. When Miriam said that my mother is destined to have the Moshiach, then they knew that there'd be, that was part of their knowledge from the Avos, whatever, that there would be someone who would come along. You see, even the Yitzhak Ninim, even the Yitzhak Paro had this notion that the Jews would have a Moshiach. That they knew. Now, the only thing is that with Ruach HaKodesh, they had a very, very strong conviction that this child was the one. And with that conviction, you're allowed to take these actions. So you can't just rely on Ein Sof Gal Anes. He said, you can't just sit back and do nothing. On the other hand, with this conviction, you're allowed, your knowledge of the Hashkafa gives you a right to do things, to take certain steps, which a person who didn't have that knowledge would not be able to take because they don't make sense. It's not the best way to save the child. You follow? So they're operating over here with a certain, that's why Rashi's saying that they, that this tzaddik, they don't want the tzaddik to have this or that. Meaning to say that was, they didn't know for sure. If they, again, I'm not saying they knew for sure that he, but they were operating with that assumption that sufficient knowledge, sufficient grounds to operate with that assumption that he was the predetermined one, because the existence of the Moshiach was a predetermined existence, and that's the entire story. The entire story of here is really the Ashkacha. That Moshe was born at a time when he really shouldn't have lived, because he was a male child and there was a decree to kill all the male children. I mean, that's the whole focus of the war. Why did it happen that way? Moshe Rabbeinu is born at a time when, according to the natural laws, he should be killed, because there was a decree to kill all the male children. And there's another irony over here too. I think about it. If there's any significance.
Or the fact that
his
power is
the irony is that the individual who made the decree, whose purpose was to destroy the Jewish nation, is the one who winds up saving the Jewish nation. He raised them in his household. Is that just an irony that we notice, or is there a point there? I mean, it turns out kind of funny that here he is with the decree to destroy the Jewish people, and he himself is the one who sustains them. You know, it could happen, you could say, well, it's just certain things. But it is kind of funny that he grew up in the house, in his own house, he was raising the one who would bring down his whole empire. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Think about that.